Stacey Perman is a former writer for the New York Times who has put together a fascinating book, a book called A Grand Complication, The Race to Build the World's Most Legendary Watch. She joins us now. Stacey, how are things?
Hi, good morning.
Great to have you here. Before you wrote this book, did you know much about this world? Did you understand the terminology? Did you understand the love that goes into this sort of thing, the watches?
That's a great question. No, I really came at this from an outsider's perspective as a journalist. I'd written an article for Business Week about a watchmaking school in Pennsylvania, and I became intrigued by this idea that mechanical watches had become so popular that it necessitated basically training a whole new generation of watchmakers that had virtually disappeared in the previous 30 years, and that kind of dropped me in what I call this three-year rabbit hole in the world of watchmaking and watches and collectors.
Well, when you talk about the collectors, there are some very, very high-profile people. There are rappers like Jay-Z. There's actors like Leonardo DiCaprio, football players like Mark Sanchez. There's like this whole subculture of people who just live for this kind of thing, huh?
It is. It's very interesting, and it's obviously quite male-dominated, which in some ways is not surprising. I mean, I think you see a lot of men who like technology and cars especially. And mechanical watches offer, you know, everything. They offer this amazing micro-mechanical universe, you know, on your arm, this incredible technology. It's really like having a little, I'd say, like a rocket ship on your wrist.
It is, isn't it? It's very similar. But why are women excluded from this? You would think if women certainly enjoy the finer things in life, why couldn't women be involved in this?
You know what? It's actually shifting quite a bit. It's interesting that you ask that right now. I think for years and years and years, mechanical watches, because they look like these, you know, sort of hefty pieces of machinery, were very interesting to men. And women looked at watches like jewelry, like an accessory. But you've seen this interesting shift in the past few years where women are getting interested in not just quartz jewelry watches, but mechanical watches with what they call complications, which are features outside of timekeeping, so like a perpetual calendar, phases of the moon, or a minute repeater. And in the past few years, you see like the best Swiss watchmakers are starting to cater specifically to women. So I think that's going to be interesting to see in the next few years. You're going to see more and more women interested in this kind of watch as well.
There's a strange parallel going on right now, Stacey, and here's what it is. So many people, and I have to admit, myself included, just don't wear a watch anymore, because if you're looking for time, it's on your phone, it's somewhere, it's anywhere, but you don't necessarily need to wear a watch. And yet, that said, this high-end world of watches and watch collecting has never been stronger.
Yes, exactly. It's a really interesting, I guess, counterintuitive phenomenon. You're exactly right. Very few, you know, fewer and fewer people are wearing watches, and you can get the time anywhere, in a microwave oven, dashboard of a car, anywhere you look, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, these high-end watches, these mechanical watches, are not nearly as accurate as a cheap $25 watch you get in the drugstore. But what they do offer is exclusivity. They're made in limited numbers. They are, you know, works of art and works of machinery. And interesting, as sort of the economy tanked in 2008, the demand and appetite for these kinds of watches just has gone through the roof. I mean, you keep seeing the prices paid for contemporary watches, but I think where you really see that is at auction, particularly for brands like Patek Philippe and Rolex. You've seen these numbers just go through the roof. It's a pretty interesting phenomenon.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Stacey Perman. She is the author who has put together a great book, A Grand Complication, The Race to Build the World's Most Legendary Watch. Since you mentioned Rolex, here's what I'd like to bring up. How much of this plays into status, Stacey? I knew a guy once who said that when he's interviewing people for a job, if a guy's wearing a Rolex, he automatically gets the tilt. That's the guy that he wants working for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a huge part of this. I think in some ways, mechanical watches, especially at that level, really might be the last real status symbol. I mean, if you think about it, all of sort of the signs out there that used to be considered luxury items have become so democratized, you know, Mercedes, cell phones, Gucci purses. you know, the entry level to buying one of these watches is very, very high. And then you have a knowledge factor behind it. I mean, I've heard from collectors, you know, they like this idea of, you know, running into somebody and they see, you know, a Patek Philippe, you know, reference 1518 on their wrist, and there's a sort of secret knowledge that they can telegraph to each other. And it gives them an instant sense of, you know, sizing up who that person really is by the, you know, watch on his wrist.
The price of some of these that's paid at auction can reach into the millions, can't it?
It can. And in fact, there was a Patek Philippe that was owned by Eric Clapton that was, went on auction, I believe it was last year at Christie's, that went for $3.6
million. 3.6, just because it was owned by Eric Clapton? Was that the selling point?
No, that helped the selling point, but actually it was a fairly rare and highly coveted reference of Patek Philippe. I believe it was a $24.99. So even without the Eric Clapton, it would have gone high, but I think Eric Clapton's ownership really helped push it along. I mean, the watch that stands at the center of my book, A Grand Complication, remains the record breaker of all time. It was sold at auction in 1999 for $11
million. Oh, man. I had a Swatch that was owned by one of the guys from Hootie and the Blowfish. I paid $8 for it. Not bad, huh?
Excellent. Not bad, and it probably runs better than some of them.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. All right, in a little bit, we'll discuss more about this fascinating book, A Grand Complication, The Race to Build the World's Most Legendary Watch. The author of that book, Stacey Perman, is my guest. You can reach us, if you'd like, at 312-981-7200 on the phones or 24/7/20 on the text. We'll pick this up in just a moment. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. My guest is Stacey Perman, former writer for The New York Times, now writing great books like this one, A Grand Complication, The Race to Build the World's Most Legendary Watch. Stacey, do me a favor. Let's talk about your two main characters. These are actual guys. These are real guys. They existed in the early 1900s. Tell me a little bit about them. What was James Ward Packard like?
James Ward Packard was actually one of the pioneers of the American automobile industry. Some people know the name Packard. Mm-hmm. He introduced the first, he was from Warren, Ohio, a little bit in your neighborhood, actually, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
He was a brilliant engineer, a brilliant mechanical engineer. He was the youngest graduate of mechanical engineering ever at Lehigh University. And what was interesting about him, among many things, was that he introduced a number of innovations in the car. His first car he introduced in 1899, it was called the horseless carriage. And he came up with all of these innovations that became industry standards, including the steering wheel, as a matter of fact, in 1903. And I have to giggle because he introduced that at the first American car fair at the Madison Square Garden, and mm-hmm. nobody knew what to make of this steering wheel. They called it this newfangled contraption.
And I think most people who drive cars would agree the steering wheel, pretty good thing to have.
I think so. I think he did good.
I'm pro steering wheel. And this is a guy, James Ward Packard, this is a guy who made millions and millions, and you know, if you adjust for today's inflation, that equals billions, doesn't it?
Probably, definitely,
yeah.
In the case of both men, yes.
Yep. So you had James Ward Packard on one side of your story, and on the other side, a man named Henry Graves. What was he like?
Right. He, you know, I introduced him as kind of two archetypes of American success. You have, on the one hand, Packard, who is a self-made entrepreneur, and then you have Henry Graves Jr., who is far less known, who came, grew up in New York, and his fortune rested on the railroads and Wall Street and banking that his father had made after the Civil War. So he inherited his fortune. So you have, on the one hand, I would say the builder of things, and on the other hand, Henry Graves, a buyer of things.
Yeah. And do me a favor, because the title is interesting. It works on two levels, A Grand Complication. A complication in a watch, unless you're very familiar with the world of high-end watches, that word may not mean a lot to you, but what exactly is a complication when you're looking at these watches?
Sure. So when you have a watch, you have timekeeping functions, the hours, the minutes, and the seconds. So a complication is anything outside of that. So you have all these sort of whiz-bang features like a minute repeater that rings on the instead of looking at the time, it actually is the sound of the time that rings at the hour and the quarter hour and the minute. You have phases of the moon and calendars. All of those kinds of features are called complications. And certain of those complications and combinations of, you know, two or three or more, those watches are called grand complications.
And now when you think about it, where everything is electronic and we just take it all for granted, that's one thing. But back in these days, in these earlier days of watches, every one of these complications meant all kinds of very small, very intricate mechanisms within the watch having to operate and do it well for these things to work, right?
Right. I mean, if you think about it, these watches are comprised of hundreds and hundreds of tiny components. And the components themselves are perhaps no bigger than a grain of rice or thicker than a strand of hair. In fact, I found a reference of watchmaking that described the pivots, these teeny tiny screws. And when I say teeny tiny, I mean microscopic. In fact, recently a watchmaker at Patek Philippe showed me one of these. He had to actually, it was naked to the visible eye. He had to put it under a microscope, and it was beautiful. It was grooved. It was polished. I mean, you couldn't even see it unless he blew it up into the microscope. But someone had described that, you know, maybe 20,000 of these little screws could fit in a thimble.
Yeah. Wow. Speaking of beautiful, in the book, there are some photographs in the book, in the center of the book, where you show you show the inner workings of a watch. And I've been lucky enough a couple of times to see these myself. But when you just stop and look at it, all it can do is amaze you when you think about all that goes into the makings of these watches.
It is pretty astonishing. I think, you know, in terms of engineering, I mean, it's a work of beauty as well as a feat of technology. I don't know that anything, you know, beats it today. I mean, you've got computers and supercomputers and all of that. But I think a watch is something really special, and timekeeping really does mark civilization through time. So it's a very interesting set of dynamics here. And, you know, in fact, until the mid-19th century, it was watchmakers who were the most innovative engineers in the world. And when you think about it, a watch, all these little parts have to work independently and mm-hmm. work together, and a fraction of an error can, you know, ruin the entire mechanism. But above and beyond that, one of the things that I remain fascinated by are these watches were built to last for generations, and they do. I mean, there are a couple of Packard's watches that were found sitting in a bank vault for 80 years. They took them out, and they were in perfect working condition, sitting in their boxes. I mean, it's amazing.
That's impressive. I don't think we build things to last like they did, you know, a century ago, do you?
Absolutely not. Mm-mm.
No. Do me a favor. I only have a minute, but you have written another book that I have not read, I'll be honest with you, but I'm going to read it because just the subject matter of it fascinated me. You wrote a book about In-N-Out Burger, which maybe in the Midwest people aren't that aware of, but this was just a very small kind of it started out as one store and became kind of not a national chain, but a regional chain and a very successful one, huh?
That's true. It was actually, you know, another pioneer of fast food, the Snyder family who launched In-N-Out Burger, actually invented the drive-through. But it's funny because I've heard, you know, ever since that book came out, it's, you know, a West Coast chain, you know, quote unquote, but it has an international following. So I'm sure there's a lot of your listeners in Chicago and the Midwest who've heard of In-N-Out, who've stopped at In-N-Out on the West Coast. I mean, it's a phenomenon unlike any other on every level, as a food, as a hamburger, as a business model, as a cultural phenomenon. It's pretty exciting. I mean, I heard from people as far afield as Hong Kong and Beijing, you know, who love In-N-Out Burger.
It's one of the first places whenever I'm in California or even Las Vegas, because there's a few there, it's one of the first places
right.
I go to. So I get it. Stacey Perman's written a very interesting book. It's called A Grand Complication, The Race to Build the World's Most Legendary Watch. Stacey, thanks for being with us, first of all, and nothing but good luck to you on the book. It's great.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very, very welcome.